The church's music from the 20th century. The 17th century. The 11th century. The 8th century. The 4th century. The best of the church's music from the past 2,000 years. LutheranPublicRadio.org.
Before I can marry Scott and David, I have to first become a minister. Now, there was a time when becoming a minister would take years of intense theological study. But, thankfully, in the age of the internet, I can go online and become a minister in just a few minutes. Instant online ordination, this is fantastic. And look, it covers every religion. There's a yin-yang symbol, there's a Star of David, there's what appear to be two radio towers, and then all kinds of other stuff. First name, middle name, Christopher O'Brien. Okay, here it says email. I am over age 13. Yes. Submit ordination request. Welcome, Conan Christopher O'Brien, to the Worldwide Congregation of Universal Life Church Ministers.
That's American TV late night host Conan O'Brien, a bit he was doing, getting an instant online ordination so that he could perform a wedding on his late night program. Greetings and welcome to Issues Etc. I'm Todd Wilkin. Thanks for tuning us in live this Thursday afternoon, the 27th of June. This is actually now the subject of some news. There's a lawsuit that has been filed by that very organization that Conan was accessing, Universal Life Church Ministries, filed a suit in U.S. District Court in the Middle District of Tennessee, saying that a law there in Tennessee, due to go into effect July 1st, that would have prohibited online ordinations as a means of solemnizing the rite of matrimony, was in violation of the Universal Life Church's free exercise of religion. Well, is this humor or is this serious news? We're going to be talking with Terry Mattingly about that here in the first few minutes of Issues Etc. A little bit later, Scott Klusendorf, president of Life Training Institute, will be our guest. Get his response to an op-ed in the New York Times titled The Long, Cruel History of the Anti-Abortion Crusade. Pastor Paul McCain joins us then in hour two to continue our series on the Lutheran Confessions today in Luther's Small Catechism, the Daily Prayers, and the Table of Duties. Joining us to talk about a media coverage of a lawsuit filed by an internet church against the state of Tennessee, Terry Mattingly. He's a regular guest, senior fellow for media and religion at the King's College in New York City, author of the weekly On Religion column for the Universal Syndicate in the book Pop Goes Religion, and he's founder and editor of Get Religion. Terry, welcome back.
Glad to be here.
So should reporters look at this like Conan O'Brien has, as humor or as a serious news story, this lawsuit?
Well, this has been a funny thing, so to speak, for several decades. Before online, I mean, there were paper mills for college degrees and a whole lot of other things. This sort of fake education, fake status, is nothing new, but obviously the internet has taken it up a whole other notch. At the same time, the internet has raised other questions. You probably have heard of groups that have created websites and formed online churches. Are you aware of that trend?
Oh, sure.
Then, of course, you've got, now here's where we're going. Everybody put your fingers in the air for scare quotes. Then you have real churches that have online services for people who can't be there. And I've heard of people you know, sending out, in obviously in Protestant context, sending people out their bread and their grape juice so that they can all take communion together at the same time. Well, is that more real than an online-only service by some group that's formed within the last 4 or 5 weeks and now declares itself an online church? Well, now this gets us to the what kind of puts you in court eventually. There's a group of people who aren't going to laugh about this at all, and those people work at the IRS, the Internal Revenue Service. At some point, if people declare themselves a church, there is a very good chance that they're going to want the tax status that goes with designation as a church or religious nonprofit. At that point, we get into some extremely interesting church-state territory that I have been reading about for decades, and it's just been cranked up in terms of heat by the internet. This case in Tennessee is really interesting, and while everybody can laugh about the fact that this is the church that ordained Lady Gaga and Stephen Colbert and Dwayne The Rock Johnson, we can all laugh about that, but there's actually finances and taxes and tax exemptions and things linked to this dispute. So I don't think the IRS is laughing. That's the quick answer. Even if we're all laughing at the late night guys, the government probably isn't.
The coverage that you've seen of this story, this lawsuit, did it adequately answer two questions? One, that is, what was this Tennessee law intended to do with respect to, you know, online organizations giving you an ordination so that you could solemnize a marriage in Tennessee? And then number two, that very question you just raised, who says what a church is?
Well, I don't know the intent of the Tennessee law other than that I would assume that some sort of fraud or profit has showed up somewhere. Wedding chapels, rent of ministers, et cetera, et cetera. And this brings us back to something that I think we've talked about on the podcast before, which is back when I was studying in the Baylor University Department of Church and State, we had a short way of talking about how the government views the question of what is a church. And basically it was that religious liberty is fantastic. We want to defend it, but there are people who will abuse these things. And at some point, the government has a right, according to courts, to investigate fraud, profit, and clear threat to life and health. Now, I think you and I have discussed in the past some of these tragic situations that get into with people who don't seek doctors because they believe only in healing through prayer. And there are other things that have come up. I think most people would know that Jehovah's Witnesses do not have blood transfusions. They believe that violates their faith, which actually they're a perfect example of a group that has worked with the government and actually kind of proven their goodwill. And we have a lot of advances in fields of low blood loss surgery due to cooperation with Jehovah's Witnesses. So there are serious things about this, but I think in this case, we're dealing with that middle word, which is profit. I mean, some people would consider these things online to be a fraud. At that point, can you imagine the lawsuits that must be percolating out there now, trying to differentiate between online education that's fake and online education that's real? I haven't seen any of that burst into the public, but I guarantee you there are people studying that. How do you know when a college degree is an actual college degree if it was earned completely online? Well, how do you know worship is worship? Let me turn this around for a second, Todd, and ask you, how do you think people in your pews, how do you think people how do you think they would answer the question, what makes your church, a real church?
Oh, I would think half of them would give a theological answer. At least I hope that they would be able to give a theological answer in terms of what constitutes the church. We would say the right preaching of the gospel and the sacraments. Okay. And then the other half would give the IRS answer, probably a garbled form of it, but the IRS answer.
Yeah. And you remember, I'm asking this question from the point of view of secular legal thought, because we're going to need to apply this to a host of different situations. Let me give you a case that you probably have heard about, but I think it illustrates some of what the IRS tried to put into its list of characteristics, and we'll actually look at the list here in just a second. You're probably familiar with the very famous case involving the use of peyote by Native American believers in their traditional tribal religions. Have you heard of that one?
Oh, sure.
Okay. That's 1990. That led to all kinds of things related to church-state law and how these things get separated. That's the Employment Division versus Smith case. Okay. So the whole point was that this group seeking a limited use of peyote was not asking for the ability to use peyote whenever in the world they wanted to. They were not asking for the right to have Super Bowl peyote parties, peyote and pizza. And they weren't saying, oh, we've decided that this is a religious ritual. Football plus peyote equals transcendence, which for some Americans, that might be the case. Other substances plus football equals transcendence for a lot of people. But they're not trying to get tax status or trying to defend their religious liberty. Okay, that's not what these believers were saying. They were saying, for centuries, our tribe has practiced the following rituals, inducing states of mind and experiences that we believe are a part of our religion. We have believed that for centuries. The tribal elders teach it to the next generation. This has been handed down over and over and over. In effect, this is a religious tradition. But notice that at that point, now we have to define what a religion is. Okay, now you may have heard of some other cases that have popped up. One, I don't think you and I discussed it, but we mentioned it at Get Religion. The Tennessee Church of Cannabis has been formed. And obviously, you worship nature and you smoke pot. And that's the worship service. Along with kind of whatever else people want to put in the mix. So is that the same claim of religious status as the Native American groups? How would you describe the difference?
Oh, golly, it's really hard to tell you the difference. Maybe I might say the Native Americans have a history like that.
There is proof, not just that they claim it, there is proof that this has existed, for centuries. There is a discernible group that practices these rituals. And we're talking about something that we didn't just make up right now. Now, you say, well, what if somebody made up a perfectly valid faith today and immediately some new prophet arises and claims that this is now the church of me and we're going to apply for tax status? And by the way, I'm divine. Everybody's divine. You can see that there's, in all church-state law, you've got this kind of haze between the good intentions and the hardcore. At some point, you have to write this thing down and decide who's in and who's out. Who is a real church and who is a fake church? Now, just for a second, you can laugh at this in your mind. If you have followed news in England, you know that in the past decade or two, in the UK census, an increasing number of people in the slot for religion have started writing the word Jedi. I am a practicing Jedi. Okay, we've got a couple of decades of history. We've got religious rituals sitting in front of a movie screen or a home screen. We have unique vestments. We have pieces of liturgy. Of course, May the Force Be With You was taken from the Anglican Book of Common Prayer. Peace of the Lord be with you, et cetera, et cetera. Okay, so here's the IRS publication 557, and they're attempting to define a church, a distinct legal existence. I don't know what the word distinct means there, probably not just part of a collection of things. A recognized creed and form of worship. A definite and distinct ecclesiastical government. A formal code of doctrine and discipline. A distinct religious history. A membership not associated with another church or denomination. An organization of ordained ministers. Ordained ministers selected after completing prescribed studies. A literature of its own. Established places of worship. Regular congregations. Regular worship services, Sunday schools for religious instruction of the young, and schools for the preparation of ministers. Now, does the Church of Cannabis have that? Does the Universal Life Church have that? Well, you probably heard several go along the way. Well, what's a regular worship service? These people say they meet online to discuss things. They hold classes to teach how to do good rituals and ceremonies. If you go to their website, you see fascinating stuff. I mean, I'll just read you a paragraph. We have made it our mission to actualize these tenets in the world by empowering millions of ministers, whether they come to us from a Christian, Buddhist, Muslim, Jewish, Catholic, Shinto, agnostic, atheist, pagan, Wiccan, or Druid tradition, to speak their own truth to power. We work tirelessly to ensure that everyone can get ordained online at the ULC Monastery, and we seek to fulfill the spiritual needs of as many different groups as we possibly can. Toward the end, it says, we believe what we're doing is just as valid a form of worship as the weekly services held in some of the world's more segregated and elitist religious institutions. So, is putting all that on a website online the same thing as it having existed? Could a government lawyer come in and say, okay, this grew out of something in the 1950s? Is 70 years enough? The online version's been active X number of years. Is this a church? This is what makes me think that this case in Tennessee is going to, you know, potentially is real interesting. And I hope that journalists actually dig into some of the church-state questions behind it and give us coverage that tells us that there are real issues here and people need to be taken seriously. But at the same time, the government has a right to inquire about profit and fraud, etc. I'll tell you another example. When I lived in Denver, I once wrote a lengthy memo when the Denver Broncos were in the Super Bowl, and I wrote my editor and said, I should be allowed to go to the Super Bowl as a member of our newspaper's Super Bowl coverage team, because if the Denver Broncos are not a religion in Colorado, then there are no religions in Colorado. And I made a sociological case for why I should go. And everybody laughed, and they all thought I was funny. And then the big story of that Super Bowl was when the Broncos and who was it? Atlanta? Anyway, the Broncos and the other team got together for prayer services before the game, and everybody got outraged about, you know, they shouldn't get together and pray. That weakens their warrior spirits, you know, and it's the Super Bowl's more serious than that. And all of a sudden, the editors are calling me at my home in Denver saying, could you come into the newsroom and help with this weird story about the prayer meetings? I'm going, I told you. I mean, so do you think Boston Red Sox fans are a church?
Well, I don't know. I was thinking more in terms of St. Louis Cardinals fans. Terry Mattingly is our guest. He's author of the weekly On Religion column for the Universal Syndicate. If the St. Louis fans are religion, they're deeply disappointed with their religion right now. He's senior fellow for media and religion at the King's College in New York City. When we come back, I got a question about when he was reading that IRS list. I got a question about something like Scientology. Stay tuned.
We know that you want to build your family on the right foundation from the very start, the foundation of Jesus Christ. Concordia Publishing House offers more than 8,000 products for churches, schools, and homes, dedicated customer service, and an experienced staff to help you focus on what matters most. Click to connect at cph.org. Concordia Publishing House, listening, responding, providing for God's people. Concordia Publishing House, cph.org.
An average of 20 military veterans kill themselves every day. Project Operation Barnabas is a network of LCMS congregations who reach out to veterans and their congregations and their communities with the gospel of Jesus Christ. Operation Barnabas is a program of LCMS Ministry to the Armed Forces. Find out more at lcms.org/armedforces. Serving those who serve. LCMS Ministry to the Armed Forces. lcms.org/armedforces.
We love our on-demand listeners. You're listening to Issues Etc.
If you appreciate Issues Etc., talk radio for the thinking Christian, and Lutheran Public Radio, sacred music for the world, please include a bequest in your will or trust for these worldwide media resources. Bequests aren't subject to federal tax or capital gains taxes. Ensure your children, grandchildren, and great-grandchildren the opportunity to listen by including a bequest in your will or trust for Issues Etc. and Lutheran Public Radio.
Memoria Press now offers 8 levels of the Simply Classical curriculum for children with special needs. These full-year packages help you teach reading, writing, arithmetic, art and music, poetry, science, history, Latin, classical and Christian studies in incremental and multisensory ways for mastery. Visit classicalspecialneeds.com and enter promo code LPR9 to save on resources for your home or school.
Welcome back to Issues Etc. I'm Todd Wilkin. Terry Mattingly is our guest. We're talking with him about media coverage of a lawsuit filed by an internet church against the state of Tennessee. So, Terry, I got a couple questions here. The first one has to do with the Knoxville Sentinel story. Do you think it adequately answered those questions?
No, I don't think it did. And that didn't surprise me that much that it didn't. I mean, in the sense that, once again, we're talking about a side of this story that requires some knowledge of both the religion beat and frankly, church state law. I think they just played it well, like, of course these people are ordained. What's the difference between an ordained person and a not ordained person? Ha, ha, ha. And I'm not saying that the Knoxville story or that the Gannett story, it probably was out of the Tennessee Gannett Network. I'm not saying that this story isn't serious or that they were mocking or making fun of this story. I'm saying that there is simply a deeper story here. That when this ends up in court, you're going to need to know the IRS law, And you're going to need to know how courts have interpreted that in these sorts of cases before. Now, as an old guy, this isn't my first rodeo, but this is one of the things that I hope journalists realize, is that when you take religion and you take the courts and you start saying, this religion is real, this religion is fake, that's important stuff. Those are arguments that matter and need to be taken seriously.
I was thinking when you were reading through the IRS list about Scientology, which I think I can arguably assert that it's the most successful religious fraud, in at least in American history. But it does tick all the boxes for the most part there. And yet there are people who do seriously argue that it is a ruse and is just simply playing the game by the rules in order to, I would say, take people's money and ruin their lives.
Well, they certainly would agree with you in Germany, where the government has basically said this thing is fake. And like I said, in the short summary of what the U.S. government is allowed to investigate, fraud, profit, and clear threat to life and health. Now, that profit one, what happens when you say we need to investigate whether this church is making excessive profits year after year after year? And they say, well, that's a violation of our doctrines to reveal that to you or to reveal that to anyone. And we don't need to tell you what's going on in our rituals either. Something that in temple worship, the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints would say that, yes, our rituals inside that temple are secret. So the Scientology thing immediately leaps up on the subject of profit. The issue of fraud is going to be harder to discuss. A lot of people would say that Christian sacraments are a fraud and that people are being brought into the church to be totally deluded. Well, what's the difference between the transubstantiation claims of the Roman Catholic Church and the Scientology claims of achieving the state of clear? Courts have to take these things seriously. In the case of Scientology, I think the cutting edge of those questions revolve around secrecy and profit.
Do you think it was adequately covered in the news just how easily Conan O'Brien demonstrated one gets a certificate of ordination and thereby, at least if this law is not put into effect, the legal right to solemnize a marriage?
Well, I mean, the point is you're going to end up signing a state document for the purpose of law and property and whatever else in the state of Tennessee. What really matters is whether you hold a legal document that shows you're married in the eyes of the state. And to some degree, who the minister was may not be all that relevant. That's going to come up in this Tennessee debate. And that's really interesting to me, because in the era of same-sex marriage, we have begun to hear, I wrote a column about an Orthodox priest up in Chicago who made this point. We have begun to hear traditional ministers who've said, I'm getting out of the marriage business. I now refuse to sign the wedding certificate of the state of Illinois, because the state of Illinois is practicing a concept of marriage and union that I do not recognize as anything that I can endorse or approve. So when people in my church are going to come for the sacrament of marriage, I'm saying, I'll marry you in the eyes of God. Then you need to go to your local house of government and get this marriage recognized in the eyes of the state. And ironically, in effect, in the name of defending Christian tradition and doctrine, they're basically saying we need to go to a marriage system that resembles that was practiced in the Soviet Union. separate the church completely from this process. It doesn't matter who did your ritual. You need the piece of paper from the state to make that claim. What do you think of that argument? Does that strike you as a defense of Christianity?
Well, what I'm thinking about it, Terry, with about a minute here or so, is that that strikes at the very root of the free exercise of religion. Can the state compel me to do something like this? Which I think is the fear on the part of that priest, or I've heard it from my fellow Lutheran pastors. The fear is at some point the state may attempt to compel me. If I keep doing weddings, I got to do weddings for anyone who asks me, or at least sign my name. And that's going to take some real homework on the part of the journalist to cover those stories. Yeah. What are your thoughts finally with about a minute?
Well, we have out in California right now, we have a resolution, I believe it's in the Senate of the legislature in California, that says we cannot force you, maybe the word yet should be applied. We can't force you, but it's a resolution of the state of California that we no longer want religious groups to practice their faith inside the borders of California unless they treat gays and lesbians, LGBTQ people in the following way. You are not welcome here. You should change your doctrine to affirm the doctrines of the modern world. Now, just a resolution. But isn't that kind of a slightly haunting development?
Terry Mattingly is Senior Fellow for Media and Religion at the King's College in New York City. He is author of the weekly On Religion column for the Universal Syndicate and the book Pop Goes Religion. He's founder and editor of Get Religion. Terry, thank you very much for your time.
Glad to be here.
Scott Klusendorf joins us on the other side of the break. We're going to get his response to an op-ed in the New York Times. It's titled The Long, Cruel History of the Anti-Abortion Crusade. See whether or not it passes a simple fact check. Stay tuned.
The church's music from the second century.
Shepherd of tender youth, guiding in love and truth.
The sixth century. The 12th century. The 16th century. The 21st century. The best of the church's music from the past 2,000 years. LutheranPublicRadio.org.
If you're at all interested in the future of the Lutheran Church Missouri Synod, you won't want to miss the June issue of The Lutheran Witness. This special issue of the magazine offers a wealth of information on the upcoming LCMS National Convention, including convention overtures, the national offering, and interviews with the three men nominated to serve as Synod President. Visit cph.org/witness to subscribe today. The Lutheran Witness, interpreting the contemporary world from a Lutheran Christian perspective.
LCMS Rural and Small Town Mission exists to support and encourage congregations in rural and small town settings. In partnership with LCMS districts, RSTM is uniquely positioned to make a major impact in revitalization support, community engagement and outreach training, congregational partnership development, and worker support through providing and developing resources geared specifically to rural and small town congregations. Check us out at lcms.org/RSTM or give us a call at our office. We're here to help.
Smartest listeners in radio, you're listening to Issues Etc.
Things when I hear on the radio tonight about Obama being a Christian but not being good because of his pro-choice and homosexuality stances.
Here's a recent comment from the Issues Etc. comment line.
yet I see no evidence of any literature that in the Bible that you stated that says that these things are against biblical teachings.
The Issues Etc. comment line, available 24/7, 618-223-8382.
Do you dread going to work out? Performance Fitness in Edwardsville offers a fun, supportive, tight-knit community and environment. Visit them on the web at performancefitness618.com or call 618-692-5063. Performance Fitness is the facility in the St. Louis Metro East where the focus is on member results, not membership numbers. 618-692-5063 or performancefitness618.com. Performance Fitness of Edwardsville.